On this week's 51%, we'll speak with the president of Omega Institute about an upcoming Women and Power conference.
I think the galvanizing issue of the day, which is connected, of course, to every single issue, is going to be climate change, climate justice, climate crisis.
And listen to an essay entitled Florida, Though It's Not What You May Think. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%. And now, biennial Women in Power Conference takes place at the end of September. Keynote talks, panel conversations, breakout workshops, and entertainment feature a number of women who lead in their respective spaces. This year, the Omega Women's Leadership Center at Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, is putting together Women and Power, Gathering Our Strength. Carla Goldstein is president of Omega Institute and co-founder of the Omega Women's Leadership Center. I spoke with her about what's in store for this year's conference.
We, I think, had this sense that there are these two very, very strong currents, right? There's the current of women rising all over the world to say, wait a minute, this is not just, this is not the world we want to live in. We reject the idea that we have to be subject to violence. We reject the things that we're doing that are resulting in climate change. We reject the idea that we're countries are going to go to war to solve our conflict. And you see women's leadership just rising everywhere, from human security, workforce, community organizing, especially the leadership of women of color. And at the same time, and it's probably not a coincidence, you see incredible regression. You know, the growing gun violence in our country, the violence that you see in the camps where people are being held for in immigration contexts, the Me Too movement. You just see such regression against women's liberty and safety and rights, reproductive rights being taken away state by state. So these two cross currents are happening at the same time. And so I think for us, when we were thinking about this conference, which we planned, you know, a year prior, was this idea of like, how do we take a big, deep breath together to gather our own strength and our collective strength and bolster our resilience for both the short run and the long run, right? We know that bringing about a more just and compassionate world is a long, long effort, but we also have very immediate crises, and the climate crisis is, like, so pressing. So how do we strengthen ourselves and not burn out and keep each other stronger and make powerful leadership connections in a convening, which always happens at a conference like this. So those were some of the thoughts on our mind when we planned Gathering Our Strength.
How did you choose the speakers for this conference that you did? Why, or I should say rather, why did you choose the speakers that you did?
Well, there are a few reasons. I mean, because they have so many speakers, so each speaker comes with a different reason. The first name that came to us, of course, was Tarana Burke, and thinking about the Me Too movement and all that it means, and, you know, centering the leadership of women of color and inviting her first. She was the first speaker that we invited. And, you know, these conferences have an organic way. You start making connections and thoughts. And so Anna Oliveira, who's the CEO of the New York Women's Foundation, she was thinking about the Me Too movement and learned that even though Tarana was becoming a national guidepost and a leader and coming to all kinds of conferences, that the money was not going towards the Me Too movement in that way. And so she created this, they paired up and teamed up and created a fund together. So then we thought, oh, let's invite Anna because we have a relationship with the New York Women's Foundation. Let's put those two people in conversation together. That could be very potent. And also thinking very much about the struggle in this country to end racism, the legacy of white supremacy, and what that means for everybody's humanity, not just for people of color, but for white people, like what we're, how our humanity is diminished in the face of racism. And so we have had a long relationship with Morgan Dixon and Vanessa Garrison, who founded an organization called Girl Trek, where they're helping black women, women of color, walk for their health, their lives, and reclaiming space and leadership, and have done amazing things. They did a walk to Montgomery, Alabama, and they're just, they're growing and growing and growing as an organization, so we thought it would be really important to have their presence. And we're also thinking about things like the economy and the wage gap that still exists and persists for women. And so we thought, let's bring some economist insight into not only the wage gap, but how do we value caretaking, which has so long been unpaid labor that women have done? How do we center caretaking in our economy? And so we have two wonderful economists and leaders coming, Nancy Fulbray and Rianne Eisler. Rianne's just released a book called Nurturing Our Humanity, How Domination and Partnership Shape Our Brains, Lives, and Futures. And from the Women's Leadership Center point of view, this is really what our work is about. We talk about doing power differently. How is it that women, as we gain more power and more leadership, not just mimic or replicate the system of power that's in place, but how do we use our power and our work to transform the way power actually works in the world, right? So that we can move away from a domination model towards a partnership model, towards a collaboration, connection, compassion model of leading and living. So we're very excited about those two folks who will be joining us. And of course, always on our mind is the stories that we tell, the cultural way that we think about our lives and women's lives. And so Roxane Gay will be closing the conference. And, you know, she's done some amazing work in her book Bad Feminist and book Hunger, and in her commentary. So these are the kinds of folks who we programmed to come to the conference. Oh, Kate Mann also, who was just put on one of those, you know, 100 world, best world thinker lists. And I was very excited about that, not only just for her, but because it means her work is on that list, and her work is all about understanding misogyny and patriarchy. And so the fact that understanding the impact of misogyny and patriarchy is on a list of 100 great thoughts and thinkers was very meaningful, because I do think people are wrestling with, you know, which way are we going to go, humanity? You know, are we going to be able to figure out how to make a world that works for everybody? Or are we going to devolve into continued warfare over more scarce resources like water? I think the galvanizing issue of the day, which is connected, of course, to every single issue, is going to be climate change, climate justice, climate crisis. It's connected to everything because it has to do with water, it has to do with food, it has to do with how we live and where we live and who gets to live. And so we've come to the place, from our point of view, that it's like you can't really solve an issue in isolation. They all have to be looked at together at the same time. And, you know, bringing half of humanity, women, into the fold of solving these problems is an imperative, because otherwise we're not bringing all the solutioning to the table that we could. So that's a lot of what the conference is about.
As you say, you know, you plan these conferences a year out. So last year, as you mentioned, this was happening. These cross currents were occurring. What is different than this year, you know, other than the speakers, obviously, about this conference?
I think that the climate has intensified. I think there's a mounting collective anxiety about the polarization that we see. I think there's a lot more that has been revealed about the size and scope of the problems that we face. You know, the fires in Russia that are damaging permafrost, the children at the borders, the raids, you know, where children are being left at school because their parents have been taken. There's just so much that is going on every day that makes the stakes of what we do, each one of us, every single day, important. You know, it's important, the decisions, the relationships, the actions that we take in our personal lives, in our communities. I was just here in the community that I live. There was a local church that held a vigil, an anti-racist vigil the other day, and it was so moving and touching to see the community coming out, praying together across denominations and committing to taking action to end racism in ourselves and in our communities and our country. So I would say, you know, the biggest thing that has changed since we programmed this is that some of the problems and the things we were thinking about a year ago have dramatically intensified over the last 12 months.
What, and you kind of answered this when you were first talking, but what is your hope when this conference closes? What is your hope that people will take, attendees take going forward?
Well, we really believe that there's such a strong relationship between what's going on inside each one of us and what's going on in the world. You know, our inner landscapes and our external environment are deeply connected. So one thing we hope is to nurture everybody. We're having a, you know, we're kind of thinking about it as a festival of resilience, like giving people real rest, a sense of calm, a sense of strength together, so that each person for themselves has some restoration. And that's one real goal. Another goal is to put into the center lots of ideas from the people who will be speaking so that people, you know, are become more aware of what's going on and how to think about things. Like in talking to Kate Mann, she was sharing that when you understand misogyny and you understand how it operates, you can predict it. And if you can predict something, then you can prepare for it better. So that's that kind of insight and tools that the speakers will be sharing with the audience is something we really are looking forward to. And then we always have breakout workshops where people can drill down into more skill building. And then there's the, you know, the relationship building over time. People who are doing work on climate will connect to people who are doing work on the caretaking economy, and people who are, you know, so there's a lot of networking and building real alliances that happens at these conferences. And just a big, great big, you know, inhale, we can continue, we can build a world that is, you know, a global culture of equality and care. We can take care of each other. That's the aspiration, and it's not easy. So how do we equip ourselves, and how do we support each other in doing it?
I love that, festival of resilience. Just, it's very inviting. It sounds like
something you
want to be a part of, a festival of resilience. Who wouldn't want that?
That's great. Actually, yeah. We're going to have this wonderful band. I don't know if you've ever heard of Batala. They're coming from New York, but there are 30 bands around the whole world, and they do amazing drumming, the music of Brazil. And so they're going to lead a parade. And, you know, we like to sit in the way that a typical conference does, where you're listening to speakers, but there's also opportunity to be in nature and to walk around and to be in your body and to find that sense of resilience that often comes from being near trees and water and listening to music and seeing art one of the things we're so looking forward to is we are having an evening performance with Natalie Merchant, a local songwriter with a global reach, and she's so inspiring and really, really looking forward to that. We've also added a new speaker. She's not new to us, but new to the program, and that is Pat Mitchell, who created TED Women and was really a path-breaking journalist and has just written her new memoir called Becoming a Dangerous Woman, which is really about, you know, the kind of risk-taking that we do when we want to make change for everybody. And so we're super inspired that she's coming to join the conference this year.
That was Carla Goldstein, president of Omega Institute and co-founder of the Omega Women's Leadership Center. Women in Power, Gathering Our Strength, takes place September 27th through 29th at Omega in Rhinebeck, New York. On the last 51%, we brought you an interview courtesy of WBFO with Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Before the interview with the Dean of the University at Buffalo School of Law, Justice Ginsburg received an honorary degree from the school and offered, in part, these remarks.
It was beyond my wildest imagination that I would one day become the notorious RBG. I am now 86 years old, yet people of all ages want to take their picture with me. Amazing. If I am notorious, it is because I had the good fortune to be alive and a lawyer in the late 1960s. Then, and continuing through the 1970s, for the first time in history, it became possible to urge before courts successfully that equal justice under law requires all arms of government to regard women as persons equal in stature to men. In my college years, 1950 to 1954, it was widely thought that women were not suited to many of life's occupations, lawyering and bartending, military service, foreign service, driving trucks, piloting planes, policing, serving on juries, to take just a few of many examples that now seem utterly senseless. It was exhilarating to help bring down the barriers that, in Justice Brennan's words, put women less on a pedestal than in a cage. True, we have not reached nirvana, but the progress I have seen in my lifetime makes me optimistic for the future. Our communities, nation, and world will be increasingly improved as women achieve their rightful place in all fields of human endeavor. At a reception some years ago, a college student asked if I could help her with an assignment. She had one question and hoped to compose a paper by asking diverse people to respond. What, she asked, did I think was the largest problem for the 21st century? My mind raced past privacy concerns in the electronic age, terrorist threats, deadly weapons, fierce partisan divisions in our legislature and polity. I thought of Thurgood Marshall's praise of the evolution of our Constitution's opening words, "We the people." Those words came to embrace once excluded, ignored, or undervalued people, people held in human bondage, Native Americans, women, even men who own no property. I thought next of our nation's motto, E pluribus unum, of many, one. The challenge is to make or keep our communities places where we can tolerate, even celebrate our differences while pulling together for the common good. Of many, one is the main aspiration. It is my hope for our country and world.
That was Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg speaking at the University at Buffalo School of Law upon receiving an honorary degree. Her remarks are courtesy of WBFO Radio. Her interview with the law school dean is in 51% show number 1572. Notorious RBG is a reference to a 2015 book and 2018 documentary. Next, poet and essayist Nancy Dunlop shares a story. Dunlop, who resides in upstate New York, received her PhD at the University at Albany, where she taught for 20 years. Her works have been published in a number of print and digital journals.
Florida. When I was 7, I learned about death. It was the day after Patches went to Florida. Patches was a horse, a Mustang, owned by my grandmother, Edith. Patches came from somewhere out west, a wild horse rescued from poachers. He shared a barn and a paddock with another horse named Christopher. Christopher was owned by Edith's daughter, my Aunt Grace. The barn and the paddock were on a large piece of property on Long Island, which was shared by Edith and Grace. And so mother and daughter lived next door to each other for many years, their horses tucked in the barn. They called each other hon, but they didn't always see eye to eye and were really very different types of women. Their differences were reflected in their riding and in their horses. While Grace rode Christopher in fox hunts, her mother Edith was a true cowgirl, preferring a western saddle, fringed buckskin, and a Stetson, which she wore when riding Patches in parades. Grace's horse Christopher was a 16-hand chestnut hunter, tall and lean, with a glossy coat and mane. Edith's horse Patches had stubby legs and a bulging belly, his fur thick and mottled, his mane long and unruly. Christopher had a small white star on his forehead. Patches bore the scar from when he was branded with a red-hot iron. Christopher trotted around the perimeter of the paddock each day, ears and tail at attention, a stately sight. Patches clomped around in the well-worn middle, chomping grass or coming to the fence if you had a sugar cube for him. But if you were someone like, say, my big brother, you could mount Patches and barely swing your leg around, and Patches would rear back and charge like a shot, low to the ground and powerful. I visited my grandmother, Edith, and my Aunt Grace every Saturday. One Saturday morning, as always, I ran to the barn to see the horses, but only Christopher was there. "Where's Patches?" I asked Edith. "He's gone to Florida," she answered. I knew Patches hadn't gone to Florida. Even as a little kid, I knew that. But I chose to believe Edith, because it was easier. If she said Florida, it would be so. Patches never came back. And Edith hasn't come back in a long time, either. But maybe way back then, when Edith White lied to me, her granddaughter, she inadvertently spoke some truth. Since nobody living knows for sure what heaven is, who is to say it is not a type of Florida, a special, unusual Florida, like some untamed territory filled with herds of horses? Maybe, when Edith died, she went to her own version of Florida. Maybe she is there still. A cowgirl in fringed buckskin, her blonde hair pulled into a single fat braid as she settles atop Patches. She digs her heels into his sides, and he erupts into a gallop, stirring up dust, his mane flying in the wind, her massive braid slapping against her back. She raises one arm, beckoning me to follow. Who is to say this wouldn't be the most splendid of heavens? When I die, I will ride a wild Mustang. I will join Edith and Patches in Florida. Grace is now in her 90s, living in a house on the Chesapeake Bay, far away from the old property on Long Island. She shared this new house with Edith until the day Edith died. After they moved to the Chesapeake, neither woman rode a horse again. By that time, Edith was confined to a wheelchair, and Grace cared for her. Grace now lives with three cats in this house, Edithless. The walls are decorated with prints of fox hunts. Grace and I talk often about many things. I've only heard her cry when she mentions Christopher, how he was put down, how he pretended to be brave for her. Grace has gone through her life's belongings, tidying up her estate. But there is one trunk, she says, she can't bear opening. And that one holds Christopher's saddle and bridle and blankets. When Grace goes away, like the others she loved, I will inherit that trunk. I will keep Christopher with me for her.
That was poet and essayist Nancy Dunlop. That's our show for this week. Thanks to Elizabeth Hill for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1573.